You're listening to Star Wars Splash Page Comics in Review.
This is episode number 229, and we're high on the High Republic. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Geek me all knowing box sets stay open May 4th. I'm hoping you're gonna be hot as before. This rent looks hardcore. And I don't want Sith running the galaxy.
It doesn't sound like I'm as good as you are right now, though, Mr. Colorado.
I got Mr. Rocky Mountain High. Exactly. But that's just the elevation, not my current chemical state.
Right. So.
Oh, let's go. We got lots of news. All right. First up, Your Money Geek is hosting its annual Top 10 Star Wars Podcast Awards. You can find a link to that in the show notes. And there are more than 60 Star Wars comics podcasts that you can cast a vote for.
Wow. And, I thought we were the only ones.
Well, apparently not. There's more than 60 and probably more than that. We, however, were not nominated. What a surprise.
We out of the 60, we weren't one of the 60?
Nope, we weren't. Not in the least. Hmm. So, although, you know, if you wanted to, there is a write-in slot. You could write in our name. I wrote in Broaxium, so because I refused to vote for myself.
Right, but Broaxium wasn't even among the nominees.
No. What? No, but you know the normal normal names and faces of Star Wars podcasting were there, and you know, and some pretty cool ones too, like you know like the ones that I love, like Sisters with Sabas and Lousy Beautiful Town, among others. So, so definitely, you know, check out the link in the show notes, and you can also find the link on the Twitter feed and the Facebook page as well. So, although I would probably go to the Facebook page because the Twitter feed may not be in existence for much longer. So, so I'm getting too old to sit there and navigate it and curate it all every day. So, and frankly, the level of
discourse.
Well, no, the discourse is fine, but the level of interaction is just, you know, steadily declining. So I mean, what's the point? I got other things to do.
Well, you know, and that's the problem is, you know, Twitter is hard. It's very loud, and it's hard to get anything of real any substance out there via Twitter. Yeah. So that's, I understand that completely.
Yes and no, particularly if you selectively and judiciously use that mute function. It actually makes things tolerable. So, news-wise, all this week, and remember, this, of course, is coming out on Wednesday, but all this week at StarWars.com, they are going to be every day revealing a Giuseppe Camuncoli variant cover, for the War of the Bounty Hunters, which is that massive event that looks like it's going to go, you know, it may go beyond June now into July. So it's going to be a pretty big deal.
If it settles, it will swell. That's how it's going to go.
Definitely. And it all culminates Friday with the reveal of another War of the Bounty Hunters one shot that has been previously unannounced, which is supposed to be part of the July solicits, as well as a look at artist Steve McNiven's sketchbook for War of the Bounty Hunters Alpha number one, which I believe is due out May 5th. And that's sort of our launching point for this crossover event. So that's going to be interesting. And add to that, this was the big takeaway. There are more than 40 variant covers for that War of the Bounty Hunters Alpha. And it looks like Star Wars is going to have a gallery featuring all of them.
Well, I hope everybody's been saving their pennies. That's all I can Lord. Say.
Well, I mean, if they price that book at $3.99 and you get at more than 40 variant covers, you're looking at spending at least $170.
Wow.
That's a lot of comics, yeah, a lot of variants too. But again, as always, I mean, you know, if you find a variant that you like, order it. If, you know, if you don't like the variant, don't buy it. So that's always been our general policy. Speaking of covers, Artist Joshua Sway Swaby noted on Twitter that his cover for Dr. Aphra number 9, which was covered by or colored by Rochelle Rosenberg, an image of which you can see on the Facebook page, will be his last for the series. So we thank him for his work. His covers have been excellent, and we will definitely miss him. If you are trying to save pennies and use Marvel Unlimited, well, you are in luck, because there are four new Star Wars comics hitting the service this month. It starts the week of April 12th with The High Republic number 1, so you can finally start seeing what all the hype is about. Also on that same week, you get Star Wars number 10. Then the week of April 19th sees the release of Darth Vader number 9. And the week of April 26th sees the release of Dr. Aphra number 7. Now, last but not least, in comic collecting news, Dark Horse Comics Star Wars The Clone Wars number 1 special edition recently went up for auction at Heritage Auctions, and it sold, and I'm not kidding, I'm not making this up, for $8,100.
Wow.
Yeah. This is part of this burst we are seeing in value for pretty much all Star Wars comics, especially Marvel's first volume from 77 to 86, as well as a lot of key Dark Horse titles, you know, where new characters were first introduced in the pages of comics. I mean, granted, I mean, you know, like, you know, characters like Thrawn who were first in the novels, but then you have his first appearance in the comic, and that has just shot up in value.
Now that's a slabbed copy, like a graded copy, correct?
Yeah, and it was graded 9.8, so it was, you know, it was a pristine copy. So, but I was surprised at how much it went for. But you know, that right there speaks to the demand for Clone Wars era content, especially, you know, when you have, you know, when you have Ahsoka, you know, who was played by Rosario Dawson, making her first appearance in live action in The Mandalorian season 2. You know, that's just only pushing up the value of some of these comic books. And
well, there's that, and the generation who grew up with the prequels as their Star Wars, and even the Clone Wars as their Star Wars, are coming of age to where they have disposable income now as well.
That's true. So, that's true. So
that's another thing that's probably working in their favor as well.
But it's also, we're seeing this, like, you know, with some of the High Republic artist exclusive variants, you know, that are being sold by, you know, like artist Mike Mayhew. I mean, you know, his stuff is being sold out within minutes. Paolo Villanelli, who illustrates Bounty Hunters, he did a trilogy of, you know, Heir to the Empire, in, you know, sort of Dark Horse era inspired covers for the High Republic. And I mean, they were selling out in less than a minute and are going for, you know, lots of money online on the secondary market. It's crazy. But, you know, again, there is a demand for Star Wars comics, both new and old. I'm not surprised in the least. So speaking of demand for new Star Wars comics, we've got issue 3 of IDW's Star Wars The High Republic Adventures.
Yes, we do. Not to be confused with Marvel's High Republic number 4, which we'll be talking about in a bit. I had to make sure I read these broken up, that I didn't read them one right after the other, so that I didn't get confused, because we all know that I'm a little slow with the uptake sometimes. But man, this cover, again, another great cover. And I mean, really all of the covers that we get, but this main cover is just gorgeous.
Well, and again, that's of course that's a series artist Harvey Tulabau doing the main cover, you know, and giving us, you know, pretty much you know, some of our major characters here, including the two protagonists of the High Republic Adventures so far. The variant cover there, the retailer incentive cover by Yael Nathan, is also superbly done.
A lot of fun, yeah.
And here's the thing, is, you know, it forms an interconnecting cover the first 5 issues, her work. So, you know, you can basically, you know, stick all 5 issues together and have this one enormous cover.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's very cool. So, and more importantly, these variants tend to be somewhat affordable, usually no more than $20. So, and they are worth picking up, you know, as is, of course, the High Republic Adventures. But so just to bring you up to date, the Padawans aboard the Starhopper, you know, are in Bralinac City, you know, on the planet Tiamat 4, which is being evacuated, and they have encountered the Force sensitive Micklin Zine Mirala, and she helped the Padawans protect the citizens of the city from this great hyperspace disaster. But in the process, is separated from her best bud, Krix Kamarat, who did not take it very well. Zine has powers.
To put it mildly.
Yeah, and so he has hightailed it off-planet with the Nile. So that is where we find ourselves in this story, written by Daniel Jose Older. Art, of course, by Harvey Toulibeau. Colors, and what gorgeous colors they are, mm-hmm. by Rebecca Nalty. Letters by Jake M. Wood. And assistant editor on this story is Riley Farmer. And the editor is Elizabeth Bry. And we open the page.
And I love the way that they've got this set up, because basically we're getting two stories told really sort of side by side here. And we start with Krix getting a message from Zine, and we're hearing her side of everything, but we're seeing Krix being Krix. For a second, I was like, that's not right. That's General Madine. We're seeing him in a fairly dreary and miserable environment, while she's talking about how great everything has been since she got there. Meanwhile, she's sitting in a very light, well-lit, comfortable-looking room, while he's telling her, she's watching his holograph graphic message about how mad he is at her and how miserable he is and how it was wrong. It was so wrong of her. And you know, obviously this is all set up. I'm getting a lot of X-Men vibes here with his reaction to it.
Very much so.
It's not necessarily an accident.
Yeah. And of course, you know, he's with the Nile, which is sort of this, you know, very rough and tumble, lived in, industrial, you know, Mad Max sort of Reavers kind of vibe. And of course she's on Starlight Beacon, which is, you know, the extension of the Republic. And of course has all the bells and whistles and is furnished quite nicely and has all the modern accoutrements of home. So.
And it looks nice and warm, whereas the Nile ship looks very cold and uninviting. And
yeah.
And I love it because what I love is the juxtaposition between where we're getting his message over the imagery of Starlight Beacon and everything that Zine and Keeve, it's going to give me trouble, that Zine is experiencing while he's... Actually, no, I'm sorry. This is wrong. I got this wrong.
No, you're flipping the names.
I'm flipping the names,
Krix is our young man with the Nile, and Zine is our Micklin, who is with the Jedi.
Right, and we started out, but they flipped it on me. We're seeing what she's telling him while we're seeing the imagery of what she's been experiencing, which, again, has been great. She's making friends and everything. She says, I've been having fun, like actual real fun. Everyone is super welcoming, especially Lula. Even though they've known each other their whole lives, they make me feel like I fit right in. And I love this because it's amazing to allow myself to actually feel the Force flow through me instead of trying to pretend it's not there.
Yeah, because, you know, she's had to keep it hidden all these years because it was frowned upon.
And then this idea of living your authentic self. It's there's a message going on here. They're not hammering it home, but it's very obvious if you're looking for it.
It is. And then again, you know, like you said, I like how they did the parallel because we have the page split in two, you know, so we see it from both sides. And since they're not there to talk in person, because then, then you see Krix going, look, it just, I'm still mad at you, Zine. I can't believe you've been a Force user all along and you never told me, you know, and all this time I thought I knew you better than anyone else. And I was wrong. So wrong. And you know that's got to hurt.
Emotine. It does, but at the same time it's and I see at this point I'm thinking with him, it's interesting what happens in this book, because I'm thinking with him, I think deep down inside he knows that there's nothing wrong with her being a Force user, but he's caught up in the dogma that he's been taught his whole life. He's trying to square that with this friend that he's known his whole life, and I feel like he's sort of teetering on the edge of going one way or the other. Unfortunately, he chooses the wrong path. And the messaging,
but it may be the right path for him. You know, because I, I think this is the sort, you know, this is the setup. This is the fait accompli, if you will, because, you know, he is, you know, her keeping this from him is an unforgivable act in his eyes, you know, whereas she is, she's having to face the very difficult reality of, you know, realizing that, you know, oh, I am among people who understand my abilities and want to help me. And for the first time, I can actually truly be myself. But at the same time, she's having to balance that out with the fact that Crix, you know, her lifelong best friend, you know, who, you know, her confidant is not a part of that. And, you know, it's like she's having to wrestle. Like, I have this gift and I'm proud to have this gift, but I shouldn't be proud of this because it's driven a wedge between me and my best bud. And that's a lot to deal with for, you know, a young person. So.
Right. And again, you know, we're seeing, again, the names are going to trip me up. Zine. We're seeing Zine, you know, in this warm environment, people coming to check on her. She's saying, you know, I sometimes still hear the echoes of all that destruction, but I also miss my best friend, Crix. And Lula comes in to check on her. She says, what's wrong? And she says, nothing. I'm just confused. And she says, of course you are. So much has happened. So I'm just processing. Did you need something, Lula? She goes, no, I can't tell you. The Jedi Masters are coming to talk to you right as they appear.
And my gosh, that's, wouldn't you be just overly intimidated, you know, and awestruck at the same time?
Except that Yoda brought pastries.
Well, you know, when in doubt, always bring a snack. It helps, yes, break the ice.
So. And so, yeah, we've got the Marshal and all the other Masters and everything there. And then from there, we cut to the ship.
The Gaze Electric, the Nile-based ship. Because you immediately do. You see the differences and the contrasts. You know, she's amid, for lack of a better term, amid all this opulence, whereas he is essentially, you know, on this very austere utilitarian ship that's designed for function and purpose, not beauty and comfort. And, you know, even then, you know, just the attitudes are completely different. I mean, because, you know, he's being escorted down the hall. Come on, kid, keep it moving. Well, where are we going?
He says, sure, they haven't treated me all that bad here. The food's actually pretty good and I haven't been hurt, but that's not the point.
Yeah, I mean,
we're trying to, you know, make the best of a bad situation yourself. All they could change at any moment.
Yeah, totally. You know, and then, you know, just, and then that's where we find, you know, then he pops in and, he walks into the bridge where he sees the encounter here. I must say, I'm disappointed, Elder Tromek. I had hoped you'd be more generous with your knowledge. Please, you have to understand, our scriptures prohibit revealing this information to outsiders. It is sacred knowledge. It can only be passed on to the next in line for our council of elders. I'm sorry. Very well, then. You know, and then, you know, and so, you know, he's, you know, Crix is seeing all this, and he goes, you know, and he's shocked and stunned. But then, you know, we hear his dialogue to her. The point is, everyone I know, everyone I've ever cared about has abandoned me. And I'm truly alone, Zine, and it's your fault. And no, it's not her fault.
No, it's not.
It's his fault for, you know, not being able to cope with the fact that she had the secret. And
being gone with her, he wouldn't be alone.
Yeah, and then, you know, that's where, you know, where we see, you know, we see Marcion take them to the rink. And of course, Elder Tromek, who's a grand, you know, you see all three of his eyes just go wide-eyed. Just like, ugh.
Well, two of the three, because one of them, I think, is glassed over.
Yeah.
And then Keen says, Crix says, I'll tell you this much. I'll do whatever I have to do, not just to survive, but to make sure no one ever puts me in this situation again. So he's going the opposite direction. Instead of owning up and saying, okay, this sucked, what can I do to get out of this? I know exactly where this is going to go at this point.
Oh, yeah. So he's going full quarter flash here. He's going to harden his heart.
Yeah. Nice. And on the way to the rink, he basically cons Elder Tromek into telling him the location of this relic that they're looking for. He says, just in case, you know, one of us doesn't make it out of here, the knowledge won't be lost forever. I swear not to tell anyone. Of course, Tromek trusts him. So he says the object is on the outskirts of the, what is it? Carva Shark ruins on the southern hemisphere of Vrant Tarnum in the far reaches of the Systarm Stigmarn system. And Chris says, there are two voices screaming inside of me, Zine, one that misses you more than anything and one that hates you for not telling me what you really are. And every single one of us has been in that situation.
Yeah.
As you're growing up, yeah. you have to compare what you've been taught versus what you know to be right.
Yeah, and you find that, in people who've grown up in strict religious households, or, in households where it was free and easy going. And then, it's the classic, it's almost like the classic generational divide. Your parents may have felt one way and you felt that way too, because you're their child. But then as you grow older and you become more open to the world, or you have different experiences, your viewpoint changes and it doesn't necessarily mesh with what you were raised on.
And this is where he is. And I think that's such a powerful message for, the all ages audience that this is intended for. Because let's face it, when you set a book for all ages, you assume that it's going to be mostly younger people reading it. But I know plenty of adults who need to hear this as well. So I'm so glad that they're presenting this in the way that they are. So they make it down to the battle rink and they find out that one of them is going to have to ride one of these creatures, the Bogorant.
The Bogorant, yeah.
And the other's going to have to be the Slime Runner.
I do want to, before we get into that double page, that double truck spread here, the way we get that intro, where we see Tromach, and Crix from behind in silhouette, with that, welcome to the battle rink, huh? What? Listen up, contestants. Then you turn the page, and in the comic, it's a full two-page spread. And then, wow. I mean, Harvey Tulebau has done such a great job of capturing the essence and mysteriousness and awesomeness of these creatures. And then you meld that with how Rebecca has colored everything. It's just, it's very awe-inspiring, and it's just so expansive and enveloping that it's just it's crazy. So, then like you said, you see somebody up on the tower, it's almost got like a Roman Colosseum vibe to it. It's time to mount your Bogorant and get a fighting. And, you have two people who have probably never mounted anything at all and have never had to fight. So, and then you can feel the trepidation and fear billowing off of both of them on this page. And then, and that's where then, of course, we cut back to Starlight Beacon. And it's just 180 degrees different.
Right. And of course, they're talking about what to do with Zine, because they said the issue, of course, is the child is far too old to begin the training. On the other hand, we still don't know the current status of Trimat 4. It's not clear whether sending her back is an option now either. And somebody says, well, she could remain temporarily, of course. She has more than proved herself a powerful ally, and she has fallen in well with my own Padawan, Lula, as well as the others. And I guess Buckets of Blood is still eating every time he tries to say anything.
Which that's a nice little light touch. I like that a lot. And I think that is a very good nod sort of to the all ages aspect of this book, because yes. You do need to have a little comedy relief. You can't be completely dour and overtly serious about everything. Now, of course, in reading this page, obviously we can draw parallels to a certain Anakin Skywalker and how he was treated by the Jedi Council. So, I think as a reader, at least for me, I'm approaching that, the events of this story with that in the back of my head. So I'm kind of curious, to see how it's going to all play out. And then, of course, Lula comes through with what I was thinking. With all due respect, maybe we should ask the person whose opinion on this subject matters most of all, what she actually wants to do. But also, and then we turn the page, maybe you should ask the opinions of the next most important people on the subject besides Zine, her friends.
That's, and again, the comparison between this page and the page that we got from Crix's perspective, this is just so welcoming, all these smiling faces.
And again, it's a great page because all these faces are warm and inviting. You have Jedi Padawans. What more could you ask for on all, and it just, again, for Zine, it's functional. For Crix, it's dysfunctional. And that's really going to set the stage for future events. So then we have a slight break and we have a galactic data file. I love these. I hope they keep up with these in every issue because I think they're great. You know, because
I love stuff like this. You know, the G.I. Joe Order of Battle, I'm a huge fan of. And so, yeah, stuff like this, I'm always a fan of.
Oh, definitely so. And I think it works perfectly. You know, we find out what a youngling is. We get a nice look at the Jedi hierarchy of the High Republic. Hasn't really changed much, you know, from what we saw in the prequel trilogy, obviously. But you know, again, it's nice. Of course, then we cut back to the Gaze Electric. And now think about this, Jeff, this whole battle arena is on board this ship.
And the,
they're head not on that planet creature, side.
And the head on that creature looks like the head of the newborn alien.
It does, doesn't it?
From Alien, yeah, to me.
It's like, it's a Xenomorph. It's, you know, whether or not Harvey was inspired by a Xenomorph, I don't care. It's an awe-inspiring and creepy creature.
Absolutely.
So of course, you know, then we have an Ortolan going, okay, trying to explain to them, you know, how this works. And, okay, so we need one of you to ride the Bogoranth. And then Tromax, I offer myself up to ride the Bogoranth, though I likely won't survive. And you know, Crick, you know, whoa, Elder Tromax, you don't have to. You know, great, great, great. Let's get you situated up here then. I have lived several centuries already. It's been a good life, though stressful. It's time for the younger generation of our people to take over. So he's being noble. He's willing to sacrifice himself. And then, of course, the Ortolan, I love this. Now that leaves the slime runner job for you, little guy. Wait, the what?
Yeah, we find out that basically when they're hungry, they leave a trail of slime. And so he's basically, if I understand this correctly, he has to be the bait to run in front, right? To get them to chase.
Exactly. That's the impression that I got.
Now they say they're hungry. Basically, these booger ants are very hungry. And if you want to stay alive and not get eaten like that guy, well, you got to run. Somebody gets eaten. Get it? Slime runner? Then we have let the battles begin and they just take off. And this is not going to end well for anybody.
No one at all, because these Bogorants are vicious. They're mean. They're hard to control. You've got the roar of the crowd that, you know, is already going nuts. And all of a sudden, you know, it's you know, we see Marchion stop the match. It's like, wait, well, that's unexpected. We have discovered a holoprojector with a direct connection to the starlight. There is a traitor among us. And of course, Crix is like, oh God, I'm busted. But again, before we get into the next page and find out what happens next to the story, this double truck, this two-page spread, just awesomeness all the way around. So busy, so kinetic, so much to look at. And again, of course, Jeff, as you like to point out, as I'm fond of saying, so many creatures. So many creatures. So an Athorian. I think that might be a Squamaton in front of the two Bogorants that the Athorian is trying to control. I could be wrong.
Your guess is as good as mine on all that.
But just again, so good. But that look of horror on Crix's face when he realizes what they've found.
Yeah.
And then of course we get a breather, a pause, because we're back on the beacon.
And somebody recounting the story of Zine saving them all from the debris. And it was great. As Lula was like, kafoom, and all the Nile Jedi jerks were like, wah, it was amazing. And I love this because one of the masters says, you see the Padawans want their friend to stay, and she has already saved many lives. And the marshal says, every time I hear the story, it keeps getting better and better, Canton. And Buckets of Blood says, and bigger, Master Chris, because of course it does. And so we find out that, you know, we may not be allowed to train her, but while she's here, she could remain here on a temporary basis. Given that she personally knows two people in the Nile camp, she could be especially helpful. So again, they're keeping her around because she's useful. So this is the Jedi that we know. But also because she has, it's sort of their way of thanking her as well.
Yeah, it's a practical reason to keep her around. I mean, I think it's kind of obvious that some of them want to sort of train her and maybe kind of go against the code or at least make an exception to the rule. But you know, they haven't been forthright yet. It'll be interesting to see what Yoda says about this. And of course, remember, this is Yoda who's not on the Jedi Council. You know, he answers to the council himself. So, but I mean, we'll find out. And then we cut back and Crix, good Lord Almighty. I mean, he just throws Tromac under the bus. Yep,
sells him out.
Wow. I mean, and I was shocked because I figured, you know,
As soon as he asked for the location, I thought this is exactly what was going to happen. He was either going to sell him out and tell them where it is, or the first chance he got, he would use that information to his advantage.
And then look at the way he sets up this lie. Are you sure, boy? Yes, I saw him using it late at night. I didn't report it because I thought you knew about it. Crix, what are you doing? It's not true. I had no idea that was here. Very well. Prepare him to become a snack for our Bogorants. Bring the boy to my chamber. And Tromac is like, no, you betrayed me after all that's happened. I helped raise you, you know, and then it's just, wow, that's just crazy. So, and then we turn the page and of course, we see, cause it was Yoda, you know, who gave Crix the projector, and its partner, he entrusted it to Zine, you know, to reach out to Crix if needed. And she says, well, yeah, he, and I responded, I just missed him. I'm sorry. Nothing to apologize for, young Zine. The opposite, in fact, huh? Huh? Indeed, the day you may very well save him. I'm like, what? So Yoda, ever the optimist and ever the strategist, I think, you know, Yoda tends to be three or four steps ahead of everybody else in this case. And that's what we see. As opposed to complete diametric opposite again, no kind words, just guile and bile and venom.
Exactly. He says, they take him in and it wasn't mine. That's where it says you're in the presence of the eye. And they concealed the holo projector from us and then blamed Elder Tromac. No. So they know. They get it. They're still going to let Tromac die. But he says, an impressive little play. I must say, I respect it. He says, you have to wait. You do? He says, the problem is what we found inside the holoprojector, a transponder beacon. You give them the Jedi our exact location.
And that's not going to sit well with denial.
Nope. And then here's where we cut back to the Starlight Beacon. And who is, do we know this master's name with the horns? He says, from what I've heard, this attack was markedly different from how the Nile usually move. And Yoda says, based on all this, I suspect this group is on some kind of secret high-level mission. We could sneak up on them and pummel them with our laser cannons, which is what the kids want to do. And Yoda says, only a short range does a transporter have. Still, there is a way.
And then we cut to the next page. And this is we have a stock six-panel page. But vertically, left side is all Crix, right side is all Zine, and this is good, and it depends on, I think it all depends on how you read this, because you could read it going horizontally across and then down to the next, you know, to the mid and to the bottom third, but at the same time you could also read it just going straight down as well, from from the top of the page to the bottom of the page. And then I prefer to read it side by side because it gives a much better contrast to the attitude and the planning here.
So. Yeah, but the rhythm of it works either way, which is what's impressive about the writing and the art and everything, the storytelling. So any way you choose to do it, the rhythm still works.
I remember the first time I met Daniel Jose Older, and that was at New York Comic Con, back when you could actually go and do things. And it was at the reveal of From a Certain Point of View, the story anthology. And of course, I had read it. As particularly his story. And after the event was over, I walked up to him, introduced myself.
Write a Star Wars comic. Not in a few years, right now. So, when he was when it was announced that he was going to be writing this book, I was stoked because I realized everything he does with, a normal piece of fiction, he's just going to be able to amplify it in this medium. And he's really done that. And he's done it in a way that not only holds my interest, and I would say your interest as well, but engages it in multiple facets. And, my kids read this series. I've got, one is 13, one is 15. They love it. And they follow it very easily. And as a matter of fact, you know, I gave a copy of the first two issues to some friends down the street who have an 8-year-old and a 9-year-old. And they say their kids are just engrossed by it.
Well, that's great.
So they're doing a really good job of not just hooking, but maintaining reader interest in this story. Literally from, you know, somebody who's 8 to, you know, someone like me who's approaching 51. But I digress.
No, it's Ed, you're absolutely right though. And, you know, just to finish up the story real quick, basically we have they're both going after the same thing. The Nile are wanting to set a trap for the Jedi, and the Jedi are wanting to try to locate and trap the Nile.
Yeah.
And Yoda even says, much pressure it is to burden the shoulder of one so young, the path we may only take if comfortable with it. You are Zine. So will you help us stop the Nile? And they whereas the Nile are not really giving Keeve a choice. He says,
not Keeve, Crix.
Crix. I'm telling you, names. Come on, Star Wars. Let's name somebody Tom. Hey, look, for Pete's sake.
It's okay. I have in front of me on my laptop pictures of everybody.
Oh, good. I should probably do that.
It's not just you. So.
So they tell him, they tell Crix, we simply left the Jedi. I think they found us. Get them where we want them and spring our trap.
And annihilate.
We can't do it without your help, Crix. Will you turn against the one who lied to you and help us defeat the Jedi once and for all?
And that's so cold. The one who lied to you.
And just, he says, I'll try right as Zine says, I don't know.
So nice ending point there. And again, book is great. It's just, it's so well drawn.
It is. Everything about this thing is again, firing on all cylinders. I love it. Cannot wait for more.
Oh yeah. One thing I was remiss on the main cover. Of course, you know, those colors are by Kevin Toliebout. I'm sorry, Kevin, I left you out at the top of the credits.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so we'll take a short break and we'll be back to discuss the High Republic number 4 from Marvel shortly.
Definitely.
And we are back to discuss issue 4 of Star Wars The High Republic from Marvel. Is this one in its 7th printing yet, or is it still...
Not yet. Okay. Still just one printing, but we'll see how it goes.
So we get this cover, which we saw last month, but this cover is very disorienting because you've got 3 characters hanging upside down and Skeer staring at them with...
his lightsaber.
Yeah, with his lightsaber in one hand and a wooded tentacle growing out of his arm and around them. It's very striking.
Oh yeah. Well, and this, because that's on the cover, you know, we see Keeve Trennis, Avar Chris, and Sarret, you know, and they're basically have been hung out to dry because the Dringir now controls Skeer. So the Dringir are going to prove to be just as villainous, if not even more insidious than the Nile. So High Republic, There Is No Fear, Chapter 4, Song of the Dringir, written by Kevin Scott, art by Ario Anandito, inks by Mark Morales, again, gorgeous and lush colors by Annalisa Leone. The letters are by Virtual Calligraphy's Ariana Mayer. The main cover was by Phil Noto. And then, of course, there were two variant covers published by Marvel that were not retailer exclusives. One was by covers by Lionel Francis Yu and Sonny Go, as well as one by Natasha Bustos. Spoiler alert, I bought both. Book design by Carlos Lau. The assistant editor is Tom Groneman, and the editor is Mark Panizia. And of course, for Lucasfilm, the same with the High Republic Adventures. We have senior editor Robert Simpson, creative director Michael Siglane, art director Troy Alders. From the story group, we have Matt Martin, Pablo Hidalgo, Emily Shkukani, and Jason D. Stein. And from the Lucasfilm art department and noted Broaxium fan, Phil Shostak. Let's bring you up to date here. The Jedi have found a derelict hut ship with a hut shot up, along with lots of other, you know, people on board shot up. There are colonists missing. The Starlight Jedi are looking for answers, and they have fallen right into a trap set by the Dringir. Jedi Keeve Trennis, Marshal Avar Chris, and Jedi Sarret are alone in facing this threat on the planet. Jedi Master Skeer, a shining beacon to the Jedi Order, he has been harvested by the Dringir. The Dringir.
And yeah, we'll go with that because people are scared of redheads.
Yeah. and he is not himself. He is possessed. And he is, you can tell that he is internally struggling. So we jump out to start the story with a flashback 6 years ago. Kirima in the mid-rim. You know, and there is Trennis. She's still a Padawan. I won't be able to make it. And Skeer, you will make it. It's too far. I'll fall. You will not fall. You need to visualize yourself landing on the other side, the ground beneath your feet. The Force is with you, Keeve. And of course, you know, we have her dialogue from the present. He always believed in me. So Keeve sets her mark, even when I didn't, and just starts running. He always knew what to say. The legendary Skeer. And we see her, you know, we're pulled back, you know, looking at the two from within this ravine up to them. We see her leaping across this very wide chasm. Renowned tactician, and she's going to fall short. No. And she starts to fall. Respected scholar. My master. And she falls, and she's maybe 6 feet from the ground?
Maybe, Skeer. Yeah.
Skeer grabs her. Always there to catch me when I fell, to put me back on track. And I'm sorry, master. Do not apologize, Padawan. There are no shortcuts on light's path. We strive, we repeat, we succeed. Now, shall we try again? He was my rock, my universe. And then that's where we cut. We turn the page and we have this, you know, this spread, this, you know, double page spread. How could it have gone so wrong? And there they are, you know, they are looped up. It's almost like something out of Alien, or the Lord of the Rings, the Return of the King, you know, where Shelob has bundled them up, and just, and there's no escaping for them. They have no way to grab anything. They are completely bound tight. And there ominously is Skeer. His left arm has been replaced with plant-like material, and he's holding his lightsaber. And such is Sedri Minor on the galactic frontier. And, you know, behind him are the Dringir. And he is in full thrall to them. And it's so creepy because, and I like what Ariana Mayer has done here with the lettering. It's
when it's the Dringir talking through him, it's a black field with white type rather than a white field with black type. Yeah, it's great.
Exactly. And it's just the Dringir must feed, Marshall. We must feed. And of course, Avar Chris is, listen to me. Listen to yourself. People are going missing on this planet. The people you promised to protect as a Jedi before you allowed yourself to be corrupted. Do you think he allowed himself to be corrupted?
Well, in her opinion, yes, because he has Jedi training to keep this from happening.
Well, all right.
I see what you mean, but yeah.
It's a bit, I don't know. Is this why you
sort of victim blaming? That's true.
It is victim blaming. It is, but then at the same time, you know, Skeer had, because that's one of that's been part of the buildup to this issue. You know, Skeer is sort of he's kind of cut himself off from the Force in a way because of what happened, that prompted the loss of his arm. You know, and she asks, "Is this why you cut yourself off from the Force, Skeer? Is this why I couldn't hear your song?" Because remember, Avar Chris, she hears the Force's music. You know, and then
I love that concept.
It's an awesome concept. And then, of course, you know, Skeer is looking at her, and if you'll
talk
notice
too it, much, he will be silenced.
And if you look at Skeer, there's a Dringir tentacle going down his throat. Mouth.
Yeah.
Is it, I mean, yeah. So he, you know, he's essentially, he's a puppet. You know, and so, yeah, he says, "You will be silenced." And, you know, and a tentacle wraps around Chris's mouth. Ivar Chris, always so convinced that the galaxy dances to your tune. You say you want to understand. You say you wish to know. Then, for once, you must truly listen. Listen to the song of the Gingir. Nice way to throw it back at her. And this is where we get a cursory history of the Gingir. And it's been building up to this. And, you know, once the Gingir spread across the galaxy, feasting on flesh and bone, wherever it was found, the harvest was abundant. The harvest was plentiful. Others saw our power and reaped alongside us. And those are Sith lords, you know.
Yeah, and I love the way that they've done this, because the page is framed by these vines and limbs from the Gingir.
And that is a very effective way of doing that, because, you know, that informs us right up front that this is the Gingir talking, you know. And then we have these panels, you know, but nothing lasts forever. Soon they betrayed us, as was their nature, because they're Sith. Soon they paid the price, fearing what they could not kill. They plotted against us. They trapped the first of us within their totems, forcing her to sleep. And while the great progenitor slept, we slept also beneath the ground, until travelers stumbled upon the progenitor, waking her from slumber. Now, does that station look familiar to you?
It should.
It should. You know why?
Because we've seen it before?
Because it's Snoke's greenhouse.
Oh, okay.
If you go back to the Rise of Kylo Ren, the 4-issue yes. miniseries, you know, this is where, Ben Solo was meeting up with Snoke before he sent him on his merry way to join up with the Knights of Ren.
It's all connected.
And that's where we see two Jedi, you know, had gone to the station and awoken the great progenitor. So essentially, you know, what we're finding out here is that this plant species is all connected. So when the great progenitor was incarcerated and knocked out of commission, all the other Gingir literally went to ground, but just underneath it, and were in a long state of hibernation. And then we turn the page and we see the Starlight Beacon with that final remark, waking us all. So, and then of course, now we are basically at the Quincy portion of the book. Because we have archivist Orbalan is doing an autopsy on that Hutt, who was found aboard the Hutt ship with those multiple wounds, and dead, you know, which made that awesome cover for the other printing. So,
yeah, and so we're back on the ship, and they're doing this an autopsy on this Hutt. And they're saying the Hutt endured great trauma at the hands of the Nile. Its demise was not the result of injuries nor magnol poisoning, for that matter. Instead, its entire system was infected. Infected how? Do not concern yourself. Rowan, Kantaris, and I are following strict quarantine procedures, which doesn't stop this from being totally disgusting. That is the all-important question, though. They appear to be part of a root system the likes of which I've never encountered before. They get roots in the Hutt's veins. He said, then there's something else to chalk up to experience. Our Hutt is alive, and it starts to move. They say, it's possible. It can't be. And it says, it's not. The cadaver is infested. And then it just explodes. It says, I believe our quarantine measures are about to be tested to the limits. And we get this great purple ooze just flying out of this thing.
Which is awesome.
Yes.
You know, and again, a great example of the color work that Annalisa Leone is doing on this series, because, you know, it makes perfect sense. Why wouldn't that do? You know, and that's a vibe I'm getting out of the thing. That's almost Lovecraftian, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And, absolutely. So,
and then we cut back, you know, and Keeve is trying to reason with Skeer. Master, listen to me. The new arm looks looks great. Really, really viney.
Viney. But you are not one of these creatures. You're not Dringir. And we get the Dringir in Skeeve's voice.
You can tell that he is wrestling. Skeeve's
voice. And he says, the Dringir have made me whole in the Dringir voice.
Yes.
And Keeve reminds him, your real arm will grow back in time. Whatever else is hurting you, we can work it out together. There are no shortcuts on Light's path. You remember, that's what you taught me. That's what I still believe, why I still believe in you. And, of course, Sarit says, it's hopeless, Keeve. I've seen the reaping. The Dringir survive come what may. Master Skeer is already lost, as are we all.
Which, that's a shame. That's a very fatalistic attitude.
So, well, and you see why, because these tentacles go up his nose and down his throat.
Yeah. So he's already being possessed by the Dringir. Then all of a sudden, and it goes through everybody's, feed. And one goes up, into Keeve's nasal passage. Master, please, whatever's happened, whatever they promised you, you don't need to do this. And we see the flashback. We see Skeer losing his arm in the space stool. And we see him fighting as well, across from that. And then, that's just it, my former apprentice.
And this is all in his voice, not the Dringir.
Yes, I did need to do it to understand the true nature of these beings and understand their weaknesses. Whoosh.
And I could just hear, you can almost just hear the score swelling there.
And then the Dringir just pop, scree. Great lettering here with the whoosh, the throosh,
And he's lifting them up. Yeah, he's force lifting them up out of the ground. Is.
And then, of course, at the same time, they lose their concentration, meaning, the vines that have enveloped, Avar Chris and the others are unwinding. Skeer, forgive me, Marshall. I thought I was strong enough, but they almost overwhelmed me. And of course, and then leave it to his former Padawan. No, you were stronger. The Force was stronger. The Force, Keeve. There is much I need to tell you. These last weeks since the Battle of Kur. And then we see Avar.
I'm glad you're back with us, Master Skeer, but your confessional will have to wait. They still have the boy.
And this is such a great.
I love it. They're all springing into action.
If this book goes to a second printing, that right there could probably be a variation of the cover.
and especially because, and this is going to sound strange, but that the blue hue in that background, I think, is gorgeous.
Oh, it's amazing.
And that's what makes it for me, is that just that it's a strange blue, strange shade of blue in the background. And I just love it.
And then we turn the page and, Skeer is back in action. Then they will feel the heat of my blade. Ah! And Keeve points out, you're still connected to them. We need to get those vines out of you. And this I thought was very intriguing. No, they are a part of me now. And I am a part of them. That's going to be, I think, problematic. It's going to have its advantages, but there's going to be some severe disadvantages. Because this is basically, I think we're going to see Skeer in a constant struggle.
Yes.
I mean, Jedi already have to balance light with dark, to prevent the darkness from encroaching. And now Skeer has got to not only deal with that aspect of his order, but now he's got to deal with this biological, for lack of a better term, this biological parasite, this herbivore parasite that's a part of him now. I'm going to be curious to see how resolute Skeer will prove to be in the coming issues. So, no, the harvest must be ours. Now, Keeve, while they cannot move, do what you must.
And I love this because she slices right through.
She does.
And she says in her monologue, taking a life is always the last resort for a Jedi, but the dark side must be pushed back whenever it is found. And that goes double for the scum maggots that do its bidding. I love that.
And then she says that, we cut to above ground. you know, and you know, there's Cal, that thug that we saw from last issue, you know, who was like, you know, you people get off this planet, you know, are you listening to me? Please, Cal, we meant no harm, you know, and he's choking a Rodian and punching a Rodian. No harm, you blab to the Jedi, and now they're sticking their high and mighty noses where they don't belong. You know how the rule, you know the rules, you know how this works, and you're gonna pay the price. And all of a sudden, the door just explodes, and what the, you know, and we turn the page. Cal Stuhlman, we need a word. And Avar Chris comes in, not in a mood to be trifled with. And he starts to run. I have nothing to say to you. And then there's Skeer. It wasn't a request. You know? And I mean, a Trandoshan is already, you know, very intimidating to begin with. A Trandoshan with a viney left arm
that you know to be a force user.
Yeah. So, and I'm pretty sure Cal probably has an idea of what the Dringir are. So, you know, to see that combined with the Trandoshan is probably his brain is just like, fatal error, shut down, fatal error.
Because he says, stars end, what happened to you? As if you don't know, this is why you didn't want us on your force forsaken world, isn't it? You knew the Dringir had taken root. It just slams him against the wall, and we get tell us the truth. And again, it's great because we get it's black. It's a black background with white lettering, so we know that's the Dringir trying to take over.
Yeah.
And Keeves is saying, remember, Master, who you are. The Force is with you. We are with you. And the Rodian says, what's a Dringir? And the Marshal says, a terrible danger. And she calls in Starlight to Chris. Come in, please. Somebody calls to her. Or she calls up and she says, calls to her and she says, this is Chris. What can this wait, Maru? We're dealing with a situation. He says, as are we, Marshal. Starlight is under attack. And we get the same feed. So this is a Dringir coming out of the hut.
Yeah.
And on top of that,
you get a seed spore in that hut, you know, that exploded out. And then, yeah, like you said, Druk. And there's Keith, Marshal. And they look up, we have company. And again, great two-page spread here. People of Sedri Minor, we have come to deliver you from tyranny in accordance with our bargain. Avar Chris's bargain? What are they talking about? And of course, Cal.
I still don't know what a Dringir is, but boy, are you about to get a lesson in real power.
Kaboom.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, ignite your saber, Keeve. Are we expecting a fight? Chak Koom is, you know, chains drop down. You could say that. And he ignites his blade. Grr. All right, Jeff, you got Gamorreans riding Rancors.
And it looks like they're wearing sunglasses.
It does, not, doesn't it?
It looks like they are, which is what cracks me up. And we've got a hut on a hover sled with robotic arms saying, rejoice, wretched creatures, your planet is now the property of the glorious Hutt cartel. And he's got skulls around his neck. Basically, he's like a cyborg Hutt.
Very much. Well, I don't know if those are cyborg. He's augmented. It looks like he's just, you know, he's got like power. You know, at least on, if you look at his right arm, it looks like it's got like a power gauntlet wrapped around it. But yeah, this is awesome. And the Hutt has hair. You see that?
Oh, he does. Yeah, he's got a top knot. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe it's a he. I don't know if it's a she, but it's an awesome display of power. And of course, you know, I'm immediately thinking of Zakus of Gracchus the Cut Hutt because of the grav sled here.
Right.
But I mean, this is pretty awesome because now we're left to wonder: are the Hutts aware of the Dringir? You know, or have the Dringir been there, biding their time slowly? I don't know. It's kind of mysterious, you know, because, you know, we have the date, you know, we have the, you know, the Nile attack on that Hutt ship, perhaps, although that's what I think it was. But then how did a Dringir spore get inside to that Hutt? So are the Nile doing the bidding of the Dringir? Are they in league with one another?
Maybe we'll find out next time because that's where we get our to be continued.
Yes. Yes, we will. Issue number 5, which is due out on May 12th. And of course we have that great Phil Noto cover, that shows, Keeve cradling Skeer, And yeah, it looks to be like maybe that arm is gone. Who knows? We'll find out. But May 12th, and of course, issue 5 is, unfortunately, that's going to be Ario Anandito's last issue.
No.
So, I know. It's gonna be a bummer. So, but we'll see how it goes. We shall see how it goes.
Really, a couple of really good stories this week, both set in the High Republic era. So I hope everybody is reading both of them, because they really are. They're different, but I think of equal value. So what have we got for next week, Matt?
I am double checking just to make sure. That's going to be April 14th, right? Right. I know for a fact we are getting a new issue of Bounty Hunters.
Yay.
Very happy. That should be Bounty Hunters number 11. And that, yeah, that's all we're getting. Bounty Hunters number 11. So,
short show next week for all of you. I know you'll be terribly disappointed by that, but we'll be back to discuss that. Anything else that our listeners need to be remembering between now and then?
Just remember that Sarah Kuhn's novel of her Dr. Aphra audio drama is out this week. And, of course, a shout-out to a friend of the show and my friend, Kristen Baver, whom you probably all know from her work on StarWars.com. her book, Skywalker, A Family at War, is out this week. I've got my copy. It should be arriving Tuesday, and looking forward to reading it. But this is a big moment for Kristen, and I'm really, really proud of her and exulting in her success. So congratulations, Kristen.
Congrats to Kristen, on
your book.
All right. Yes, congratulations indeed. So that's going to do it for this edition of Star Wars Splash Page. Until next time, I'm Jeff.
And I am still Matt.
And may the Force be with you.
Always.
The Star Wars Splash Page theme song is Mark Hamill Can Handle by Chris Cape. Check Chris out at chriscape.com and on SoundCloud, on Twitter at Chris Cape, and on Facebook.
Stop peeing!